This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2020, Episode 13. For the first time in 2020, we are talking about a win. A win for the Nebraska Cornhuskers as they beat Penn State 30-23. It's hard to believe we're talking about the first win, Dr. Rob, that comes in November. And the first home game that is also in November.
It is such a weird, bad year.
You know, last week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast, I talked about, you know, I was going to get tested for the Rona because that's why you had to do it via Skype. Just to let you know, I've tested negative, and now we are back in the studio together. We are drinking beer, and we're kind of beer snobs tonight, okay? Because the beer we're drinking is actually like coming out of a wine bottle, and it's from Oregon.
This is big time.
This is for those of you who do or do not know, I do a morning show in Des Moines, Iowa on KXNO, and I'm in Des Moines quite a bit because I also host a radio show on Saturdays that have to do with one of Nebraska's arch rivals and competitors, the Iowa Hawkeyes. But have you ever been to the El Bait Shop in Des Moines?
I haven't yet. You and I have talked about it a bunch. I mean, we got to hit it up sometime.
So for those of you who love craft beer, the El Bait Shop is one of the top three craft brewery or craft beer bars in America. I believe there is now 217 beers on tap. 217.
That's pretty impressive.
On tap. Well, the owner, Jeff Bruning, who goes by Bruno, he knows I'm a big sour guy. So he had a bunch of like this exclusive stuff in his basement, and he calls me and goes, "Hey, you know what? I'm clearing out my beer stash. For $75, you can have this." And you were just in my it's like a cellar in there.
That's easily. So you got a bargain, dude.
I think so, too. So this is from DeGard Brewing in Tillamook, Oregon, and it's a Saison Premier, a tart farmhouse-style ale, and we'll tweet out a picture of this, but it's 750 milliliters, and it's 6% by volume, and it comes in like a wine bottle.
I'm kind of doing the math in my head right now, and I mean, he hits you with probably about a 20% discount on all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Easily.
You know, and I wasn't one of those guys, you know, give it to me for free, man, I help you out. No, I knew what I was getting.
Which, if you know Travis, it's kind of surprising.
Come on now, be nice to me, be nice to me. But yeah, so I haven't tried it. What do you think of it?
Oh,
I'm letting it breathe a little.
It's so good, dude.
Oh.
That's a tasty beer.
Oh.
And this is one that'll sneak up on you. I mean, that's 6.5%.
Yeah, 6%.
Yeah, so it's not like it's going to kick your butt, but I mean, basically it's almost.
You said
Coors Light's what, like 4?
Yeah, you said you felt refreshed, like you wanted to go to mow the yard.
Oh, yeah, like that is like. Real, I mean, it's a sour. So I mean, it's kind of that acidic tartness.
It's a saison, which I know, but that's like the most sour saison I've ever had.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the saisons I've had, I mean, it's almost they can have kind of for a lighter beer, they can have kind of a heavier sweetness to them. And this doesn't have that, which I really like.
Man, that is really good. Now, unfortunately, I only have one bottle of this, so I think there's like two more glasses there.
Yeah, we're killing that.
We're going to kill that, no problem. We'll probably have to take a break in the middle of the podcast and go get another one of those bottles.
We got celebrating to do. I'm like 3-0 on football teams for the weekend.
Well, so. And let's start with the most important thing, and that is, first of all, I have not asked any of you to give us a like on iTunes or give us a review on iTunes. If you get time after this podcast, you know, just give us a rating 1 through 5. I don't care what kind of rating you give us. Well, I really do.
Well, I do. Yeah, give us a 5.
Give us
Come
a 5.
On.
And if you can take the time to write a review, that would be even better. And you can do it on Podbean as well. And just to let everybody know, you can find the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy almost anywhere now. We are, of course, hosted on Podbean. You can find us on Apple iTunes. You can find us on iHeart. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Google Podcasts. So really, anywhere you can find podcasts right now, you can find the Husker Doc Talk podcast. So let's start with Friday. So for those of you listening out of state, Dr. Rob has a son who's a junior in high school. He plays at Omaha Westside. And Omaha Westside is undefeated and now going to be playing in the Nebraska Class A, which is the largest class in the state of Nebraska, state championship. What's that feel? I mean, I watched my son go through Creighton Prep. They got to the semifinals, and I remember how proud I was just to get there. What's it like?
This is kind of, so this is all we know, really, because Westside's had this run where they've made it at least to the quarterfinals, God, really, since our kids have been in high school.
Yeah.
state title game in 2013, which they lost to Omaha North. Omaha North had a runner-up finish and then a couple state titles in a row there. Had a whole bunch of just sent a whole slew of kids to college. If you were following Nebraska football, Michael Decker, who had about kind of a partial season run as a starter before injuries kind of ended his career down in Lincoln, but heck of a center for Omaha North, Calvin Strong, bunch of really great football players back then. Made it through the playoffs, made it to the playoffs every year since then, made it to the state title game last year where we just got nuked by Bellevue West, which is essentially functions as – they're basically a JUCO from a talent level. I mean, it's just the amount of talent that Coach Huffman's got down there in Bellevue is amazing. The guy gets some really good talent from the area, and then he's got a solid offensive system. And when I say solid, I mean, they'll just gut you. I mean, it's a brutal team to have to go against. This year they actually were I think USA Today, up until they lost, Bellevue West was the second or third ranked team in USA Today. I think it's like their Midwest region. Which Omaha West Side was top 10 in that as well.
Was it?
Too. It wasn't number two or three, but they were top 10.
But you guys just beat Millard South to advance to the state championship. And do you find yourself taking more pride in watching your own kid in success and like enjoying that more than you did your own?
Oh, big time.
I know.
It's huge. And I'm a bundle of nerves watching that. If I've got a vested interest, I mean, go back to when my brother was playing for Nebraska. I mean, I didn't want to be around anybody watching Nebraska games when he was playing. It's just, you got a family member playing. And now that it's your kid, it's like that, except it's amped up a lot more. And it's same with all of my kids. My daughters play sports. I mean, when it's your kid out there, oh, my God, I'm a bundle of nerves. I am not a good spectator.
So this ought to be an interesting state championship game because Omaha Westside plays Elkhorn South, in which your brother John's son
is the starting center.
And if you're a Nebraska fan, Teddy Prohaska is
Teddy. Teddy's an offensive tackle and defensive end on that team, which they also have. Both teams have kind of sort of this low key who's who of Nebraska football history. So Chris Brown's son, Colby's one of our quarterbacks, and Damon Benning's son, Caleb's a freshman on the team. You go out to Elkhorn South. Obviously, we just mentioned my brother John. You got Teddy Prochaska, who's he kind of falls in the whole UNO legacy. So technically, University of Nebraska.
Yeah.
Which is, his dad played it. He was a very good football player at UNO. But then Carson Crouch, Eric Crouch's son's the kicker for the team. Sam Hoskinson, running back and linebacker on the team.
So there will be a lot of names Nebraska fans know on that team.
Oh, absolutely. So if you get a chance and can find – and I'm pretty sure any TV, there's a number of streaming sites that are going to be broadcasting the game. So you're going to be able to watch it. But, I mean, if you want to watch a bunch of – well
– legacies.
Yeah, Husker legacies. There's going to be a bunch of them playing next Friday night.
All right, so has the smack talk started between you and your brother?
You know, we kind of keep it a little low key. We kind of playfully were poking fun at each other a little bit on Twitter Saturday morning. But outside of that, we really haven't. I mean, I think both of us understand kind of how cool it is to, one, even be here. I mean, for us, like I said, Westside went to the state title game last year. So I've got a pretty good understanding of how important it is for these kids and how big a deal it is for these kids. First trip for Elkhorn South, and so there's a lot of respect that I look at what Elkhorn South has and the quality of players that they have. I look at the fact that you've got my nephew, who I've been kind of following him since probably 7th or 8th grade in terms of, hey, how far is this kid going to go? How good is he going to be? And so I've really been focused on that the last few years, and so you've been watching that team as well too, so I've got a ton of respect for what they've done.
All right, so a couple brotherly questions. Who's the smarter of you and John?
Oh, me, easily.
Not even close?
Oh, I'm joking. John He kind of always said, I guess I called it, had more of a real-world goal when he was going through college. I mean, his,
so you mean he has higher EQ than you?
Yeah, maybe.
<He's>,
come on, dude.
Who's tougher, you or him?
You know, I've always been bigger and stronger.
Yeah.
I mean, John's maybe 6'2", 6'3". I'm about 6'4", 6'5", on a good day. And I topped out at probably almost 330. I think John, 305, 310, like at his heaviest. He was always kind of the one who was, you know, I will gnaw through your leg if it keeps you from winning the fight. kind of mentality. So
I like that. I like that a lot. We ought to bring him in someday just to drink beer with us and tell good Zadiska stories. Because you have an older brother that nobody even knows.
Well, he lives in Memphis. So, which, and he, you know, he always played some sports. He was never the, where it was kind of that hardcore dedication to the sport. I mean, John and I both looked at it as like, okay, we're going to get college paid for. And we were A students in high school. But, I mean, if you're a high school kid and you're thinking about, okay, I want to go get everything paid for, there's more athletic scholarships out there than there are national merit finalist scholarships.
And yeah, so, but what'd you get on your ACT?
Shoot, 30, 31, maybe, something like that.
You probably would have got college paid for.
No, I mean, and I had academic scholarships coming out of high school. So, you know, that wasn't a huge concern. I guess my logic was I'm getting this paid for one way or another. It's just most of those true 100% full rides, which, again, still don't pay for everything, but they're going to cover the basics. It seemed to me, at least in my estimation, it was easier to get an athletic one than an academic one.
Just for the record, the beer we're drinking is kick-ass.
That's an awesome beer.
It is just really, really kick-ass. So I just want everybody to know that Rob and I are enjoying a really, really good beer. And I'm sure a lot of you are going, are you guys going to get to the fucking game or not? And the answer there was a game yesterday in which Nebraska beat Penn State 30-23. However, if you were to cover up the score and look at the stat book, you would have never known that Nebraska won that football game.
That was an ugly game. Which, you know, I know Damon Benning even tweeted during the first half. He goes, hey, keep in mind, statistically, they're moving the ball. They just haven't punched it in. And they're usually better in the second half, so beware. And talk about being spot on.
I don't want to pee on somebody's parade, but let me start with the negative before we get to the positive. So the defense did a great job late in the game. Two red zone stands that kept Penn State out of the end zone.
Yeah.
But look at the yards they gave up. They performed when they had to, but in the long haul, is there a problem there?
Yeah, I worry about our ability to stop the run against a good running team. Now, it's hard to really formulate a really good evaluation when you've got three games under your belt. Now, Northwestern, I thought Nebraska actually did a pretty good job against Northwestern stopping the run, save for a couple of big runs. They had a couple of big runs that really hurt us in that game. Go back to the Ohio State game. Nebraska's run defense was outstanding against Ohio State. Now, are you going to sit here and tell me that Penn State has a better rushing attack than Ohio State? Well, it's maybe. But that's kind of hard to say. I mean, I think Nebraska's shown they can stop the run because they did against Ohio State. They did a pretty solid job of it against Northwestern. They looked atrocious doing it against Penn State. Now, is that a one-off? Maybe a little bit. I think there were some things they weren't prepared for. I don't think they were prepared for Penn State's quarterbacks to take off and run. I mean, it looked like Marv Seiler all over again. I mean, these big, tall, what looked like classic pocket passing quarterbacks would take off and run and gash you for 8 yards every time. Penn State has good lines on both sides of the ball. Now, we're talking about Nebraska's ability to stop the run, and so I'm going to kind of focus there. Penn State's offensive line's a really good offensive line. I mean, when you look at Penn State from a personnel standpoint, there's a reason they were a top 10 team going into the season. Now, obviously, they're 0-4 and not going to be ranked at all when the season's over, but that if you look at them just purely from a personnel standpoint, their offensive lines and quite frankly, their defensive lines are really, really good.
But it's not going to be the best offensive line Nebraska sees this year.
Probably not. I mean, I think Ohio State, I mean, they've already seen one in Ohio State that was better. I think Wisconsin's going to be very, very good. Iowa's still freaking loaded on the O-line. But it's a good offensive line. I think we lose a little focus when we start looking to the East Division just because we're honed so
That's
much.
Fair.
Yeah, we're honed in on Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, et cetera. In that East Division, I would put Penn State's offensive line up there against Ohio State's any day and say, yeah, they're as just a unit evaluation, Penn State's offensive line, I think, is just as good, if not better, than Ohio State's.
Now, to pay a compliment, because you're right, they gave up 501 yards yesterday. They gave up 245 on the ground. But you make two stops late in the fourth quarter inside the red zone when the Time of possession differential was 13 minutes. You should have been gassed at that point.
Oh, hugely. And they gave up a couple of field goals earlier in the game when they could have given up a touchdown. Penn State lived in the red zone yesterday. I mean, they really did, in the fact that you limited them on three occasions to field goals, once to no points. That's huge. I mean, that is huge. So it's they did a good job with that. The problem for Nebraska's defense that I worry about, I mean, everybody talks about this whole bend but don't break thing.
I hate that expression.
God, I do too. You get their defense down around the goal line where just the opposing offense doesn't have as many options because there's not as much space to work with. They do a hell of a lot better, but, man, you get them anywhere else on the field. And there's some limitations that defense does has. I actually think they're pretty darn good against the run. I just think Penn State exposed the fact that I think Nebraska's still hurting a little bit at the linebacker spot. You know, I get it. JoJo Doman had a great game. Colin Miller had some big plays. But, I mean, as a group that can consistently stop an opponent's rushing attack, our linebackers, they have a little ways to go there.
So what impressed you before we get – because we'll get into the quarterback situation. We went into a great deal about the offensive line last week. Were there any improvements there that you liked that you did see this week?
Well, you saw Cam Jurgens back, which was good. I still don't think he looked 100%. I don't think he looked as good as he looked against Ohio State. So I think he's still hurting somewhere. He's had a run of foot and ankle injuries. People kept mentioning a turf toe issue this time around. I don't know if it's truly a turf toe or something else, but he still didn't look like he had that really, really great explosion and power that you normally see out of him. I liked seeing Ethan Piper in there a lot. I mean, you got a Norfolk Catholic kid in there. They're always mean SOBs. They just are. But I like seeing him. And again, he's inexperienced. He's got a lot to learn. But I think he's one of those guys that you kind of do with what you did with Jurgens the last year or two, where, you know what, you just got to put him out there and let him play, because at some point they're going to be better than anybody else you've already got. I thought Ben Hart did some okay things again. He's a guy that needs to learn to use his size and power. They're too much screening guys off, needs to get better extension with his arms, better punch with his arms on the pass blocking, and learn how to use that height and that leverage to his advantage. But more than anything, he just needs to be more aggressive. But again, he's a guy that I think is going to be better at that right tackle spot in the long run than anybody else we've got on the roster. I'm still just not sold on Matt Farniok playing anywhere on that offensive line. I think as long as the guys that we've already mentioned are healthy, Piper, Bo Wilson, Jurgens, if those guys can play, I think you play those guys.
So Nebraska made the official switch at quarterback. Luke McCaffrey, 13 of 21, 152 yards. He had a touchdown pass. He had an interception. Also led Nebraska in rushing, 13 carries for 67 yards and a touchdown. What would you give him as a grade?
You know what I mean? Within the scope of things, maybe like a B+. If you take him just standalone, like, hey, how did he do compared to anybody anywhere? C+, B-. I mean, he did okay. I mean, it's not.
But it was
like,
a spark, right? I mean, he's going to get credit for it.
Yeah, and I think it was a little bit of a spark there. I thought especially the short passes had a little more zip to them, a little bit better accuracy to them. He still takes some risks that I would like him to not take. There's a couple of throws where we had two passes that, I mean, they landed in a crowd of defenders, and we were lucky they didn't get intercepted. So he's got to clean that up, and he's got to be willing to just, you know what, sometimes you just take the sack. Sometimes you just throw that ball out of bounds and live to fight another day. I mean, there's some times that you just can't, you know, try and risk it when you're basically you're a redshirt freshman. And when you're in that situation, I don't think he's got yet the ability to wing it and force something to happen. Tommy Frazier could do that. But, I mean, it's as much as I like Luke McCaffrey, he's no Tommy Frazier. So.
Though the weird thing was, wearing number 7 and the way he played yesterday, I know you're cringing already, but there were shades of Crouch just, I mean, the way he looked, it was weird to me.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's going to be Eric Crouch. I'm just like, wow, it's just.
Crouch was a little bit more of that kind of running back in a quarter with a quarterback's arm. I mean, he was a running back with a really good arm. I mean, if you saw Crouch in his prime, that was a big dude. I mean, it's one of those guys talk about like Danny Woodhead and Rex Burkhead. It's like, well, they're this high. They're not that big. But then you see him in person, you're like, that's a pretty big dude. Then you realize why those guys went to the NFL. Crouch was the same way. I mean, Crouch would run through a lot of guys. Now, I think McCaffrey does a good job. I think he's harder to bring down than Martinez is. I mean, it's interesting. I see him breaking tackles that I don't think he should break, but he does. He's got outstanding speed. I don't think he's got the kind of speed that Crouch did. Crouch had track speed. I mean, Crouch had that speed that if he kind of did a little bit of training, would have been placing at least during the indoor track season in the 60 meters. I mean, the guy could blaze. If he had a seam, he was gone. There's guys that are going to catch McCaffrey now. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying the guy's slow, but he's not one of those guys where he's going to hit a hole and he's just gone. Now, he's going to break some tackles and he's definitely going to get some yardage. But, I mean, if you've got a really fast ball player, really on defense, they're going to catch McCaffrey. So
McCaffrey leads the team in rushing yards of 67. He had 13 carries.
Which is not a good thing.
And that's what I was going to bring up. So Wandale Robinson has 16 carries for 60 yards. Is the ideal for Robinson 20 to 25 carries? I mean, I think you need a running back. I fall on that thing. You know, I look at Breece Hall from Iowa State right now. I don't know if you've ever watched that dude.
Guy's a baller.
I think he should be leading the Heisman, but Iowa State's given him the ball 25 to 30 times a game, and he's leading the nation in rushing, and he's a beast. He's an absolute beast. Where's the magic number right now?
Well, and that's the thing. We don't have that. I mean, I'd love to say that, but I mean, Wandale's not a running back.
That's fair.
He's like a third down running back / slot receiver. Same thing. I mean, Mo Washington was the same thing. I just completely blanked. Transferred to TCU.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. He's been doing special teams
Spielman,
a lot.
Thank you. Spielman. JD was the same thing. Third down running back / slot receiver. They're not none of these guys are every down running backs, and that's something Nebraska's been looking for since Azigbo left, is somebody who could kind of lock that role down. Now, if you've got somebody who can do it, I mean, they kind of played around with guys like Marvin Scott, essentially, et cetera, back and forth on Saturday. But we just haven't had that guy that's been able to step up and be that every down back and be productive play after play after play after play. And now if they got to do it by committee, fine. But, I mean, man, you need to kind of get that committee honed in here and see those guys start to generate some productivity. But we just haven't had that since Ezigbo.
Okay, so fair question. I think it is. Can Nebraska take that next step until it has somebody like that? I mean, and win consistently.
I think it's going to be tough. And, again, I go back to one of the things that I think that 2018 season, why it generated so much hope for Nebraska fans and so much hype for Martinez is because even though we lacked a lot of depth, at least those key components that you need in an offense, you need a solid quarterback. You got to have a deep threat. We had Stanley Morgan. He was a classic down-the-field wide receiver. You got to have the mid-range guys. Well, you had J.D. Spielman. Mo Washington was on that team. You need an every-down running back. We had Ezigbo. I mean, you had these guys that fulfilled all those pieces of the puzzle that you got to have, and they were all productive. And when you had that, that offense churned out a lot of yardage and a lot of points. And we're sitting here going, oh, my God, this is going to be awesome in next year, the year after. Next year, year after, still here. And I think we've been okay at the quarterback position. We haven't had a deep threat. I mean, nobody is looking at Nebraska right now and going, oh, my God, they are going to burn us deep. We got to make sure we kind of pull some of these guys back off the line of scrimmage. Nobody's thinking that. They're basically, you know what, if Nebraska's going to beat us, whether it's quarterback, running back, whatever, they're going to have to do it with the run game. Or they're going to have to do it with kind of the mid-range passing game. And, well, that frees up the defense to kind of focus. When you got to focus on two areas instead of three, and that makes it so much easier on a defense. We just haven't had that we haven't had that deep threat or the consistent ability to run the ball the last 2 years.
Does that surprise you?
A little bit, yeah. I am shocked that we haven't seen a deep threat receiver emerge. Now, you look at, I think it's Fleming, you look at Xavier Betts. Let's get these guys going. I mean, you can't tell me these guys don't know how to run a damn post route. I mean, just let's start doing it and try to see if we can't get the ball to these guys. Running back wise, I think they're playing around with it. I mean, it might be a case of where during some games they got to try some guys out who maybe haven't shown the ability in practice yet. Some guys do better in games. I think we might be in a situation where these guys haven't had enough practice time to show that or develop it, and they're going to have to just throw them out on the field and see what they can do.
Do you see anybody at that running back position who could carry that load? I mean, it's a big load. I mean, that's...
Yeah, and I mean, the guys they have, I mean, it's not like you look at Tompkins or Ramir. I think Scott could be. I mean, Wandale's shown that he can be tough. I mean, he's a tough, tough kid. He's a hell of an athlete. But, God, I don't want to put Wandale Robinson back as your featured running back and have him pound the rock 25 times a game. I want to see him run the ball 5 or 6 times a game. I want to see him run 2 jet sweeps. I want to see him catch 2 screens. And then I want to see him catch 4 passes over the middle. That's what I want to see. I want to see him be that slot wide receiver, that third down running back that he should be.
So 3 games in, and we may have touched upon this before, but let's revisit. It's 2 questions. You'll see where I'm going here. Right now, most overproducing or overachieving group on this team?
D-line. And again, you've got a couple of young guys there with Casey Rogers and Ty Robinson. Ty Robinson, I think, at least from what I've seen in 3 games, he should get some kind of All Big Ten mention. Now, I'm not saying first team, second team, but he's a guy who I think as a freshman this year could easily have honorable mention All Big Ten, which it's tough to do on the D line in this conference. There's a lot of good classic interior D linemen that come out of the Big Ten. I mean, hell, an incredibly mediocre Nebraska team put three D linemen into the NFL who all made teams this year from last year's team. I mean, who would have thought that? So I think there's been a big upgrade there. I think Ben Stilley's playing very solid. I mean, fifth-year senior at this point, you want to see solid play out of him. So there's some guys who are doing some really good things on that defensive front. And again, as bad as we looked consistently against the run on Saturday, I really do think they were playing against, well, in hindsight, we're going to look back and go, damn, you know what? That Penn State O-line was really, really good.
Okay, most underachieving group on this team.
Ooh, I'm kind of lumping thus far offensive skill position into one group, quarterback, running back, wide receiver. We're just not seeing it yet. And, you know, this was kind of interesting to me. So you saw during the game, Michael Huffman, who's Bellevue West's football coach, because people are tweeting and all over social media left and right about Xavier Betts, who he coached all through high school. And you're seeing Betts get the ball. And it's one of these things. Every time the kid gets the ball, he does something. Sometimes it's just a quick short pass along the sidelines. You saw him on the jet sweep for a touchdown where he just ran through and passed everybody. The guy's got kind of crazy speed. I mean, he's a big, tall guy.
He's got track speed.
He does have track speed, except the dude's like 6'3 or 6'4. I mean, he's so long and tall, he looks like he's hardly moving, but he's pulling away from these little DBs that run a 4.4. So it's anyway, I'm getting excited about Betts here and wondering why they're not giving him the ball more. But I think to go back to what Huffman was posting on social media, he made the comment that, hey, when your quarterback is your featured back in the run game and not the running back, if you don't have a feature running back to focus that run game around, you've got a problem.
It's what we've been talking about this entire podcast.
I know, and I guess what I'm trying to say is that when you ask me who do I think's underachieving, we've got this weird situation where everything that offense does hinges on the quarterback right now. To the extent we had to make a change at quarterback to provide a spark for the damn offense. Well, that says there's some serious underachieving, whether it's in player development, recruitment, I don't know what, at the running back position and amongst the wide receivers. A good group of running backs and wide receivers can make can make a lot of quarterbacks look pretty good. You look at some of those Wisconsin teams where, minus Russell Wilson, all they had were really good running backs. You plugged in a game manager at quarterback, and that's all they had, and they're still just destroying guys. So I think Huffman hit the nail on the head. When your offense is 100%, its success is 100% predicated on what the quarterback's doing, you should be a little bit worried. And I am, because we haven't seen that feature running back, that feature wide receiver step up yet. Or I see some guys that I think could be the featured guy at wide receiver. And again, it's just one of those, at this point, I want him to get the ball to Betts every freaking play.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because you could almost go back in time, right? I mean, we've talked about Eric Crouch, and the year he won the Heisman Trophy.
Weakness of that team. He was the offense.
And then after that, the quarterback position kind of remained that way. Right?
Yeah.
You could almost say that was the doom at some point.
That's a great insight. I can't say I really looked at it that way. But, yeah, you didn't have that. After Crouch, I mean, they had some guys when you look at...
Jamal Lord was a good quarterback, but it just seemed...
He was a blazer as an option quarterback.
It just seemed the quarterback became the focal point. And I get quarterback's always going to be the focal point, but it just seemed like...
You didn't have that all-star running back to spread the load. And, I mean, I think Nebraska, when you go back, especially go back to like 99. I mean, that was a hell of a team they had in 99.
I will say, I tell this to everybody... that the 99 team should have won the national championship, was the best team in the country, hands down.
I agree.
Hands down.
End of the year, nobody wanted to play.
Not even close. It was. I'll never forget, 1999, Dan Alexander fumbles the football, and I think Carl Buckhalter did, like, four times down at Texas.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those classic cases of turnovers. I remember at the end down at I believe it was the Fiesta Bowl, and they played Tennessee, I believe it was. T. Martin was the quarterback. There was no question about who the best team in the country was.
Yeah, it was like a 97 rematch.
Yeah.
It just destroyed them again. And that's the thing. I mean, you looked at that time period when he wasn't fumbling the ball. Dan Alexander hurt people. I mean, he was not the shiftiest guy on the planet. He was kind of sort of like a junior Herschel Walker in that he would run over two guys, and then he'd basically blaze like a 4.2 40 sprint to the end zone and outrun everybody. And Carrell Buckhalter was a really, really solid all around running back. I mean, Carrell was it the Eagles, I think, had a solid career with Philly. So Nebraska had some really good running backs, but that was really kind of where it ended. I mean, kind of that 99, 2000, 2001, you just didn't have that featured running back anymore, and it fell off. And for some reason, I think a lot of coaches, college coaches included, they pulled their focus off of that position to a degree. Now, there's schools that still do. I mean, you look at Wisconsin, obviously, likes to feature a running back. But if you've got a guy who can run the ball from that position and do a lot of damage, the degree to which it spreads the load on offense is amazing. Now, at the NFL level, you still want that. But again, the quarterback becomes the focal point of the offense, but not for the running game. It's because of their ability to pass in a pro-style passing system, which damn near everybody runs in the NFL, including Mahomes in Kansas City. It's just a West Coast passing offense is still a pro-style passing offense. But at the NFL level, that focuses on the quarterback for passing reasons. At Nebraska, we're looking at Martinez and we're looking at McCaffrey, and we're wanting them to be the focus of the offense almost more for their ability to take off and run. And again, that can be really problematic.
See, and that's you know, I do I'm an Iowa fan. Everybody knows that. Everybody's, you know, complains that Iowa doesn't have a mobile quarterback, and they really don't. It's not that you want a quarterback that can be the focal point of the running game. You just want one that has the ability to take off and run.
Yeah.
But that you don't want him doing that all the time.
No. I mean, ideally, you want the guy to be sitting back there.
Yeah.
Because guess what travels faster than a running quarterback? A thrown pass. I mean, it's a hell of a lot faster and can cover a lot of ground really quickly. And so you want a guy who can throw the ball well and has somebody to actually catch it. And right now, Nebraska's still struggling a little bit on the throwing and a lot on finding the guy that can catch it.
Scott Frost, after the game, said the team needed the win, the state needed the win, he needed the win. There's a lot of mental games that go on with losing. How big of a win was that against Penn State?
I think it's big because I think they've got some other games this year that are winnable. I don't think anybody truly expected Nebraska to sneak a win in over Ohio State. I was actually really hopeful about the Northwestern game, and quite frankly, if you go back and look at that game, that's one of those games where you're just like, God damn it, how did we lose that game? Although you look
it's no different than Penn State to Nebraska. Like, if you look at the stat sheet, you're like, oh, Nebraska lost to Northwestern, and then Penn State would have beaten Nebraska. It was the complete opposite. You're right.
No, exactly. And I mean, on the flip side, you look at what Northwestern did against Purdue, and all of a sudden you're sitting here going, God damn, those Northwestern's pretty good this year. They're having a I don't even know if I want to say they're pretty good. They're having a good season. It's two different things. So, I mean, I think Iowa's pretty good, and they're having an okay season thus far. I mean, they're, what, four games in?
You lose to Purdue and Northwestern by a combined 5 points, and then you blow out Michigan State, and you kick the crap out of Minnesota.
Which is always good.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned transitioning into winnable games for Nebraska. Up next is Illinois. And Illinois – beat Rutgers, which actually surprised me, 23-20 over there.
That surprised me, too.
I know, but Illinois is not very good. I mean, so here's a chance for back-to-back wins for Nebraska.
It is, and I think that would do wonders for the program just to kind of get on sort of a little bit of mental footing here, which I think we got Iowa up next after that. So, which, again, that's a game that – if you ask me to try and pick them in terms of like, hey, who do you think is going to win this game? You can't pick that one. I mean, Nebraska's lost 3 years in a row to Iowa, and all three have been really, really close games. Or at least the last two have been really, really close games where Nebraska's put a lot of fourth quarter pressure on Iowa. So I don't think that's a gimme for Iowa by any means, and I think Nebraska is going to at least have a chance there because I think for some reason Frost and Shenander seem to, once you get past the mid-third quarter, something magic happens and they end up suddenly actually finding their coaching hats going against Ferentz.
Well, let me put my Iowa hat on here, and I can tell you what it is. And I'm not making excuses, but go look at one of the biggest criticisms of Kirk Ferentz, even by his own fan base, is that he doesn't like putting the foot on the pedal. He won't try to just dominate you. He'll play to not to lose.
Sometimes it happens. I mean, you saw some of those games against the Mike Riley teams where it just – all of a sudden, guys are busting 40-yard runs left and right and going Minnesota on us. But
for the most part, most people tell you that Kirk Ferentz, if he has a lead at halftime, plays not to lose.
Yes, I will give
you
that.
And that's a dangerous mindset to have.
It is. Here's the thing that I think if you really followed the commentary after the game or even during the game with that Nebraska game on Saturday, that was a little bit of a criticism for Frost that you – I mean, I had a tweet to that extent where basically it was one of these, you know what, it's like we've got a 3-score lead at halftime, which was great. I loved it. Man, let's go out there right off the bat and let's make this thing a 4-score game. Let's take the reins off. Let's play around with, I mean, you got these new toys for Christmas. Let's see what Betts can do. Let's send a couple of guys long. Let's play around with some of these different running backs. Let's throw a little Central Florida at these guys and see what we've got. And it was one of these, now we're going to do some short dump passes and some 3 yards in a cloud of dust and hope to God Penn State doesn't chip away at this 3-touchdown lead. And which they did.
Which if they would now, I know hindsight's 20/20, but if they would have lost that game, to lose that big of a lead, a three-score lead, that would have been detrimental to the psyche.
And honestly, that is something that I'm sure that coaching staff. I hope to God they're doing some serious self-evaluation in terms of what. And, well, even the offense too. Like, hey, how can we take pressure off of the defense? How can we make changes on this defense to not have this happen again?
You had mentioned because of the switch at quarterback, I mean, Adrian Martinez for 2.5 years has been the starter for Nebraska. He gets benched, and there was a picture out there of him, you know, basically being a really good teammate and cheering on. You were happy to see that photo.
I was, and I never doubted that about him. And I mean, everything I've heard about him is that, one, he's a great guy, hugely, hugely supportive and wants to see the team win. If McCaffrey truly locks down this starting quarterback position, I actually do have trouble seeing Martinez sticking around. I think he'll transfer, and I don't think anybody will blame him for it. But I appreciated seeing him having that support because it would be really easy for a guy to not think that way. But I don't know. It's going to be an interesting dynamic going forward because, again, as much as I thought McCaffrey provided a spark, at the same time, it's not like I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, he is just lighting dudes up here left and right. He did some good things. He did some things I thought that he can do better than Martinez can, at least currently. But it's not like we saw the second coming of freaking Tommy Frazier or – like we suddenly, I mean, remember Taylor Martinez?
Yes.
Like his freshman year where yep. he was going out and just nuking K-State and Missouri left and right, and it was just brutalizing those teams. It's not like we saw that with McCaffrey on Saturday. It's not like he went out there and Penn State just didn't have an answer for number seven. I mean, that's not what we saw. We saw a guy who was a little bit of a spark, was a little bit harder to tackle, and might have run the ball a little bit better, and had just a pinch better snap on his passes than what Martinez has. I mean, that's what we saw, and maybe that's the difference between a win and a loss, but I'm not sitting here going, yeah, this is we're never going to see Martinez again. I don't know about that. And the other thing is, McCaffrey, for a very good athlete and a well-developed guy, he's not the biggest dude on the planet either. What happens two games from now when he's taken a hell of a lot of hits what's his durability like? Again, we don't have a good answer for that yet.
So, we got some questions coming in, and John says, hey, and John's from Vegas, does the sellout streak end with the Penn State game, or does the record have an asterisk? Listen, the sellout streak maintains because the Big Ten is not allowing fans, with the exception of family members.
They actually sold out before the season started. So they, if you want to split hairs here, they sold it out. Then they all gave them back.
he also said his boss, Jerry Reynolds.
Yeah.
Who played with you at the Giants.
Absolutely.
He wishes we had a call-in number so he could call in and screw with you during the podcast.
Best wishes to Jerry and his wife, Kelly. Great couple. So Jerry was a UNLV grad, kid from, I think it's Fort Thomas, Kentucky, just south of Cincinnati across the river. Big kid, went to UNLV, got drafted by the Cowboys, and then traded to the Giants. And he and I, we actually had the same agent, so I knew him literally coming out of college, essentially. But great guy. Jerry is, he's like about 6'7", 350, and might be the
big dude.
He is a huge human being, but just the nicest guy I'd ever want to meet. Great family, though. So hello to Jerry. So please pass along my regards to Jerry and his family.
So Kevin in Pasadena, California says, what is Dr. Rob's take on the number of injuries that have occurred on this team? There was a lot of talk about Zach Duvall would make things so much better. He has. The strength increase is obvious. But why have there been so many injuries? I'm imagining the number is higher than it is.
I've seen a lot of little nicked up and ding stuff, which you're not going to avoid. I mean, you give me a particular season, and I'll run down the list of guys who went out injured, because you're always going to have some stuff. The thing that I'm not seeing, though, is a lot of the soft tissue injuries, the sports hernias, the ligament injuries, the muscle injuries. You saw a lot of hamstring pulls and muscle tears that hampered guy previous to Frost arriving, and you're not seeing as much of that anymore. I guess I haven't sat here and thought, yeah, the injury bug, that's been the problem. I mean, when I look at the team and the stuff that's really slowing this team down, little bit's been player development. A lot of it's sort of, we talked last week about the mental toughness and discipline, the penalties, the turnovers, things like that are the things that still haunt this team, and that's something that they're going to have to figure out a way to overcome.
So, let's move on to the rest of the Big Ten. I don't know if you watched any of the Wisconsin-Michigan game last night.
Good Lord.
What,
I think Harbaugh's on the hot seat.
It's a good question when it comes to any coach this year, right? Because let's go to the end of basketball season. I think Danny Manning was like the biggest name coach to lose his job. That was about it. I just think most people – because of the financial considerations that are happening in athletic departments right now.
Good point.
Most coaches are going to get a pass. It's just a weird year.
Okay, you asked me some hypothetical questions last week about me and recruiting. I'm going to ask you this. Let's say this is a non-COVID year.
Yeah.
And Michigan is still having the year they're currently having. Losing at home to Michigan State, getting just throttled by Wisconsin. Is he on the hot seat?
Absolutely.
Then?
Well,
so I'm saying the whole COVID situation never existed.
Michigan is no different than Nebraska. It will fire coaches that win 9 or 10 games a year. Jim Harbaugh has won 70% of his games at Michigan. So the answer,
which is actually pretty solid.
It's very solid.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you are expected to win Big Ten championships and compete for national championships. He hasn't done it.
Well, and he's in a position where, Urban Meyer's a hard guy to have to try and beat year in and year out, and he never did.
No.
Then Urban leaves, and you got Ryan Day, and it's one of those like, crap, it's Urban Jr.
And so,
yeah. And it's the same level of recruiting. So it's not like all of a sudden it's, okay, well, it's Luke Fickell now at Ohio State, and now Harbaugh's going to switch over and be the
dominant. Speaking of Luke Fickell, that dude's winning at Cincinnati.
He actually is, and there's been a lot. He's had some development there. I think he's one of those guys that he had that interim year at Ohio State, which I don't think anybody expected that to be more than a one-year thing, especially when Urban became available. But he also was one of those guys that kind of had to learn how to be a head coach.
Show me a coach at Nebraska, including Tom Osborne, that has not had to deal with fan apathy. And I'm using that as a correlation to Michigan, where if fan apathy sits in and they lose interest, you're screwed. You got to go.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, luckily, Tom Osborne didn't go take the Colorado job when he could have, when he was winning.
And he got offered at Minnesota, too, yeah. Later in the game.
Man. So you look at it and go, okay, he persevered and got through. Frank was never given that opportunity.
No.
Bill Callahan was never given that opportunity.
No, although I don't think Callahan.
If he would have fired Kevin Cosgrove, that dude could still be coaching at Nebraska.
I don't know about that.
Okay, it's an exaggeration, but you know what I mean. His offenses were not bad. No.
His game management was horrific.
That's fair. Cotton Bowl is a perfect example of that.
Exactly. And he would have continued to do that. I think So Callahan's first year, 04, 05, 06, 07. Yeah. So the 05 and 06 teams, I think they almost won as many games as they did in spite of Callahan. I say that in all seriousness. You look at his track record since. Any place he's been as an offensive line coach, or even O-line coach / run game coordinator, he shines. Moment he becomes the full offensive coordinator or a head coach, interim head coach, man, that clock starts ticking. And it's literally just a matter of time until things fall apart. I think Solich is a different example. I think Solich is a guy that if they had just left Solich alone, he would have continued to learn, continued to develop, continued to mold a staff. And I think most years would have punched out a 9 or 10-win season. Every 5 years, he'd have a 7-win season. Every 5 years, he'd punch out a 13-win season.
Bo Pelini, another fan apathy. Nine wins a season.
Yeah.
He had other things. I mean, the apathy fit in because of his temperament. I get that.
Yeah, he wouldn't get rid of Tim Beck, who I know Tim's doing
really good at North Carolina State
right
now.
Yeah, I mean, God, they freaking lit up Florida State yesterday. I watched that game. Which was funny because you got Tim Beck at North Carolina State. You got Papuchis at Florida State. It was like, okay, this is weird watching these two guys coach against each other. But I think if Pelini had been willing to change offensive coordinators and basically – He's like an angry Donald Trump. Like, if you could just get Pelini to just shut up, smile, and give the answers that his aides were telling him to give, he'd be fine. It's just the guy you put a microphone in front of him, and he became an angry idiot. And I think he's a better coach than that. I thought he actually did okay. He just needed to be somebody who never had a camera on him. But you can't have that in this day and age, and so you got to learn how to deal with it. And Pelini wasn't willing to learn how to deal with that.
Yeah. So I mean, but to answer your original question is yes, I think Jim Harbaugh is on the hot seat. It'd just be interesting in a COVID year whether anybody makes a change, which is weird because
I think people will make changes, but I don't think it's going to be like it normally is.
Yeah. I mean, which does a Hugh Freeze at Liberty get out of Liberty? Does a Luke Fickell at Cincinnati get out of Cincinnati? Normally, this would be the year those guys get major jumps. I just don't know if that's going to happen this year.
And that's if somebody makes a change, it's because they're going to quietly go through back channels and talk to those guys and find out, oh, you would leave and come over to us if we fire our guy and make an offer. That's where you're going to see those jumps. What you're not going to see is a whole you're not going to see 15 guys get fired and another 15 guys leave to take those open spots.
Which, you know, one guy I'd like to see get another job is Lance Leipold at Buffalo. People may not know Lance Leipold's story, but he's most famous for winning all the national championships at Wisconsin Whitewater. People will forget that he was on the Nebraska staff with Bill Callahan. And they'll really forget that he was on Pat Byrne's original staff at UNO. Then after he left Nebraska, came back to be the offensive coordinator. The dude is a really good coach. I just hope he gets a bigger shot. I mean, he's winning at Buffalo. Nothing wrong with Buffalo, but I think he can do bigger things.
I agree. I think people still want to see, for a lot of these smaller schools, I think they want to see a
big upset.
They want to see an extensive track record. I mean, I think what they That's you know what fair. They want to see? They want to see multiple upsets. I mean, you look at like Kleiman at Kansas State. You look at Craig Bohl down at Wyoming. Those guys, when they were at North Dakota State, would knock off a 1A team every year. They'd knock off an Iowa, an Iowa State, a Minnesota. They were knocking off somebody damn near every year, every other year. So if you talk about the big upsets, you're going to have a couple of consistent – show that you can consistently do that. You kind of – but, I mean, for every guy like Leipold who shines at Buffalo, you got Turner Gill, who I don't think Turner's a bad coach. I think he's a solid coach who did really solidly at Buffalo, got the job at Kansas and tanked, although Kansas.
Hold on, he got job at KU.
Yeah, I'll give you that. That's just a shit job. I hate to say it.
But it can be a good job. Glenn Mason won there. Mark Mangino won there. It's not that I think you have to have realistic expectations. I mean, they're really bad this year. I mean, they're fucking really bad.
But do you think Les Miles lasts?
All Les Miles has to do is get to six wins, and it's a success, right? I mean, that program is still A, minus some scholarships. I equate what Kansas is now is to what maybe Kansas State was when Bill Snyder took over, or even Dan McCarney when he took over Iowa State. You need to give a coach there 6 or 7 years to turn around. You can't expect miracles in 3 or 4. I know some people can turn around that quick, but I think in the long haul, that's a 6 to 7 year project.
Well, here's a question. You just put that number on it. Was Nebraska that bad before Frost arrived?
I think the difference between Nebraska and some of those other is the infrastructure in place. Money is not a problem at Nebraska. Facilities are not a problem at Nebraska. If you go down to Kansas right now, facilities are pretty much no different than when you were there. They just got an indoor practice facility 2 years ago, Rob. So, I mean, the infrastructure just wasn't there, and it hasn't been for a lot of those schools to keep up in the modern day of college football. Nebraska may have been bad talent-wise, but there's other moving parts to college football that can determine success and how fast you can get really good guys in the door.
Fair enough.
That's what I think. I mean, but I'm souring on Kansas anyway, so I'll fill you in on that later. You didn't mention my new
I've been
specs.
Checking out the new shades.
You like them?
Yeah.
Where'd Do they make get? Me look smarter?
No.
Fuck.
Takes a lot, dude.
I know. So I got them at Costco. I got two pair at Costco for $213. I know, and they're progressive lenses.
See, now you sound like my dad. It's like, and I save 7 cents a gallon filling up on gas.
And I have the UV coating, scratch resistant coating. I got if I bought two pair, I got $30 off an extra pair of frames. So I went ahead and got two pair. Throw in the VSP insurance, and I paid $211 or $213, something like that, for two pair of glasses.
You realize you were super excited about this.
Well, because I haven't had glasses in like 3 or 4 years, so I was pretty excited about it.
There you go. I do need new glasses.
I know. It's one of those things where, and I went for a completely different look. I had a little thinner.
It's a stylish frame you got here. You might need to take a photo and post
it. Well, I posted last night with my wife and I. We went on a date last
night. That's a
nice picture. Yeah.
I was legitimately trying to come up with some snide comment.
Well, you were really good.
I couldn't.
I had my boss run into my office this week and he goes, "You see Zadisk on Twitter? He just ripped you for being an Iowan, you know, because you were making fun of him because he got a 2-minute answer out." And I'm like, "See, Rob just sits back and waits for me to comment on something on Twitter, and it's usually you come back with a much better comment than I've ever had."
Man, you tee him up.
I do.
Well, though, I mean, if you're gonna do that, I'm gonna swing the bat.
See, the difference is that most people don't know me like you do, so we have that relationship to where, oh, I know Trav here. I'm just gonna hit one right out of the park. It's like going to.
I was a little disappointed that when you and your daughter started discussing what was it, watermelon White Claws?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I was surprised that the comment I had for that never got any traction. So,
by the way, I don't drink a lot of White Claw. I do on the golf course just because it's easier.
You just whatever, dude.
What? How many White Claws did you see in my fridge?
I'll give you that. There weren't many.
How much beer do you see in my fridge?
Yeah, there's a lot of beer.
There's a lot of beer.
Good looking beer.
Really good looking beer. And I'm sharing it with you. So be nice to me.
Fine.
Be nice to me. All right? And be nice to, even though we're not drinking Infusion Brewing Company beer right now, but be nice to Infusion Brewing Company beer because, well, they're really good. Be nice to Husker Hounds because Scotty's just a really, really cool dude. He runs a great business. And, the holidays are coming up, Rob. And look at, you're wearing a Nebraska sweater. You get that at Husker Hounds?
I did. This is my, this is probably my, it's a zippered hoodie.
Okay.
I got this from Scott. So
I saw you interacting with our good friends from Ticket Express on Twitter this past weekend.
Oh yeah,
Jessica and Chad, they're hanging on, man. I mean, pandemic's been rough, but if you're looking for a stocking stuffer, they have 2021 tickets now available. Of course, Nebraska will be playing in Dublin, Ireland. You get tickets to that. So if you're looking for stocking stuffers for the holidays, go to TicketExpress.com. If you're looking to downsize your office or a smaller office space, Chad actually has some
he's
office
got,
space.
Yeah,
over
he's
there.
Got real estate. He's
yeah.
You
know. So that'd be kind of cool. Who am I forgetting anybody? Oh, Husker. I don't think Husker Max enough because those guys over at Husker Max do a really good job of putting our podcast out there, and they're so nice to do so. And so when you want up to date information, your one stop shop is HuskerMax.com. Now I will say this. Follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at DocTalkSports. And I'm asking you to follow him because you are 5 short of 5,000 right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we're right there.
How
do we get a blue check mark? I want my damn blue check mark.
You won't get one. Because the email attached to it is a Gmail account, which is DocTalkSports@gmail.com.
Oh, they don't like that.
They don't like the Gmail. It should be like Rob@DocTalkSports.com. I don't know. Listen, I'm in the media. At a radio station, I still can't get a blue check mark. But you know what? Blue check marks are snobs. They really are. Take pride in not having the blue check. Because
right.
We make fun of the Pat Fortys of the world. We make fun of the Paul Feinbaums of the
world.
Those
guys are a-holes with or without.
Yeah. Did you notice
check.
They didn't pick on Ryan Day for saying he wanted to play football this week?
Oh, they didn't touch that one with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, because they were chicken.
They're a-holes.
And that's why I'm actually glad Nebraska tried to play that week because it set the pace for the – everybody in the Big Ten knew. Well, I think that's why Nebraska did it, actually. Said, let's try to play. And if they say no, well, that means nobody else can play either.
Yeah, it does. It kind of locks that policy in.
Next week is Illinois for Nebraska, and then the following week is Iowa. So that means next week's podcast is going to be
it's going to be fun.
Really, really fun.
We should call Infusion, see if they can't whip up a batch of loose morals just for that one.
We may go 2 hours next week. Because I can really have long conversations about Iowa. He's Dr. Rob Zadisk. I'm Travis Justice. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.